Mr. Boss Rutan, man of the hour, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
We're honored to
pleasure.
Have you on. We're honored to have you on.
Thank you.
Well, we were just talking about your career, and we were just talking about if right now, if you were in the prime of your career now, where do you think you'd be? You think you'd be in UFC? Do you think you'd be champion? Do you think you'd be a contender? Where do you see Boss Rutan in 2013 if this was your fighting prime?
Oh, every fighter should say that, right? I will be the champ. The thing is this. Let me say this. I have 95% of my career I did with one sparring partner. Well, actually, my first year and a half I did with a training bag. And then the rest of my career I did with one sparring partner. Only when I came to America from 97 on, I had more sparring partners. So I think that if I will be thrown into mixed martial arts, if I will be miraculously suddenly be 25, and I will go to, like, Vegas and train with all the top guys. They say, you know, you're as strong as your partners, right? So I think if I had a plethora, as El Wapa would say it, of sparring partners, I think it would automatically make me much better as well.
Hey, Boss, when did you develop your hatred of livers?
You know, after I got dropped in my first Thai boxing class with it. it was very painful. And I remember him. He says, the left hoof to the body. I said, why is it hurting so much? He says, your liver is there, your liver. And I go, oh, you know, I kind of like this, to do this to people. So that's when I started focusing on it.
Thank you.
Now, your first professional fight that was documented was in Pancras in Japan. How do you get to that level in your first fight? Is it just through reputation only that they've heard of Boss Rutan in different tournaments and now they want to bring him in for his first professional fight in Japan?
You know, it was all very weird. I was really doing good in Thai boxing. And Chris Dolman, he was the owner of Rings, the organization Rings, he called me one day and he said, hey, you got to come to Amsterdam tonight because there's two guys for a new organization, Pancras, Funaki and Suzuki, they're looking for fighters. So I said, okay. So I jumped in the car, drove over to Amsterdam, and you know that they were filming, and we had to spar with each other. Now, one of the Rings champions wanted to be cool because they were filming, so he tried to knock me out, which resulted in me knocking him out and with a high kick. And he had a bunch of stitches in his head. He had to go to the hospital, and I saw Funaki and Suzuki pointing at me, and they said, we won him. And that was it. I think 2.5 months later, I was in Japan fighting for the first time. I didn't even know the rules. I thought it were, first of all, I thought it were weight classes.
Wow.
My guy was 245. I was 195 pounds at the time. So that was like 45, 50 pounds heavier. I go, oh, is that legal? He says, yeah, there's no weight class. I said, oh, cool. I said, how many rounds we got? He says, one. I said, nice. How many minutes? 30. I go, oh, nice, cool. But I, you know, of course, I was freaking out on the inside because I go, well, what am I doing here? No weight classes, 30-minute rounds. This is crazy, you know. And then, I dropped the first guy in 43 seconds. I put him in the hospital, and they changed overnight. It was overnight. It was the weirdest thing. Man, people putting babies in my hands on the street, people bowing. It was the weirdest experience ever. It was super cool.
Well, we've had a lot of MMA people and a lot of people that do professional wrestling that were very big in Japan, especially the wrestlers. And they said they get treated better than rock stars get treated over here in the States. And they say that anytime they get off a plane or they're in a hotel lobby, the Japanese are notorious for giving them gifts. What's the strangest or craziest gift or Japanese story you can tell us?
Well, yeah, they do, you know, the chocolates and things, but it puts it through the crazy stuff. I have something really cool. It's from a samurai family. I actually put it in a frame. My wife put it in a frame. It's really cool. It's from a samurai family. It's an original written note. God knows what it says. But it's original. Maybe it says, Boss Rutan is a dumbass. Yeah. You know, I don't know. But it's... But no, it's really cool, and it has a little bag with it that came with it, and the bag is also made from that samurai family with a special how you call it texture. So it's really cool, and that's something that we frame because you know not everybody has that. I also went to the number three or the number four sumo wrestler in the world was a big fan of me, and he invited me also to the. To his dojo, and I got also the, you know, where they make the kimonos of that fabric. they give you a roll of that fabric, and it looks like really simple, but it's not, because that's an honor. So I always thought maybe I should make a bathrobe from it or something cool, because it's kind of fun to do.
Back in those Japan days, did anyone ever come across where they were offering you money maybe to throw a fight over in Japan?
No. They never did it. Thank God. And I told them in the beginning also, because rings that was known for having works, and in the beginning when I came to Bankhurst, already the people in Holland said, you know what? Because the first two guys, I knocked them out. And then the third one I lost against Funaki. He put me in a toehold. And after the show, Funaki wanted to have a talk with me. And they warned me. They said, they're probably going to ask you to throw a fight. I go, you know, I'm not going to do that, because I want to look at myself in the mirror. You know, I don't want to be a guy who has a belt and it's a fake belt, you know, because I hated those guys who would come back from Japan and they would say, yeah, you know, I just became champion. But then the next time when they fought and they lost, they came back and they say, yeah, I lost, but, you know, I had to lose. And then I would say, yeah, but last time you had to win also, you know. I mean, so, and I didn't want to be one of those guys. So that's why I was always very, I spoke up to these people, because people have been saying, oh, Pankhurst is fake. And it went even so far that they said, the boss didn't know it was fake, but they would tell the opponent. Like my fight against Funaki, they said, Funaki lost that on purpose. And I go, like, did you see the fight? Was that before he tried to break my leg, or was it after he tried to break my leg that he decided to go to lose the fight? Because he took a really big risk there. He put a toe hold in my neck and a heel hook. He made it with his neck. He reversed my heel 180 degrees. If you see it more than 180, you're going to go, I was even looking at my leg, and I thought, hey, I don't feel it, so I'm not going to tap. But I figured out. I mean, normally that would have, would have been snapped, I think. So, you know, I think it's all talk. All the guys that said that they had worked fights, there were their losses that they that were worse, they said, you know. And I go, oh, that's... Isn't that very convenient that you now you tell everybody that only your losses were worse? So I don't believe it. I asked Maurice Smith, I asked Frank Shamrock, Guy Metzger, all these guys. Nobody ever has been asked to lose a fight or to win a fight.
Well, you know what? We loved you in UFC. Your short stint there, you became the UFC heavyweight champion. And then it was vacated due to injury, and you were going to drop down to middleweight, which now is light heavyweight. Will we ever see you doing any kind of commentary or having any kind of association with UFC? What's your relationship like with Dana and UFC?
It's good. I never had a problem with Dana. They've always been good. So, I would love to jump in one time for fun. But, you know, it's a thing that I simply, even when they would ask, I can't. It's such a commitment. They have so many shows. You know, and there's other things that I want to do. I got Inside MMA, which is every week. I don't want to stop that either. I'm in the middle of a film shoot, actually, right now. You know, we just paused to do this interview, and I'm doing this also. You know, and once you start working for a company like that, who have, God knows what, 30 shows a year? You know, that's a lot of shows. And I know they have more commentators, but, you know, I'm just very, very busy at this moment. And I like to pitch my ton of my things, you know, the WSOF with Ray. Ray Staple, you know, he's a buddy of mine, so, you know, I helped him out there. And Invicta with Shannon Knapp, you know, I like also to help out there. And then Glory, when Gokhan Saki fights, he always wants me to commentate on his fight. I those things I like to do.
And the Invicta commentary was awesome. I think Invicta is the next big thing for MMA fans. I truly enjoy their shows. I just hate watching them on a computer. That's my only complaint. I hate watching them on a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, but they will have a deal now. It's going to come up, you know, and a TV deal with In Demand or something. So she's working hard on it, Shannon. There's a lot of people want to be involved with this company right now. She really has to filter all the good ones out, or the bad ones, whatever you want to call it, and make the right choices, you know. So, but it's a good problem to have for her.
Yeah.
What movie are you filming now?
It's called Mercy Rule. It's an it's a family flick with Kirk Cameron in the lead, and I'm the head coach of a minor league baseball team. And I'm just the scene that I have here in the I'm drilling this little star on the team. I'm telling him about teamwork, that he doesn't play. You know, he's not a team player. And I'm explaining to him that baseball is all about helping each other. So,
yeah. You know, you should probably do it as a joke tonight. Maybe you should just go up to Kirk Cameron and grab his ass. I heard he's not a big fan.
Better yet, punch him in the liver.
No.
I heard he's not a big fan of anything homosexual. So just give him a little grab. A little grab ass.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah, I've been saying that. Everybody has their opinion. You know, I'm living my life, I always say, you know, everybody happy.
Oh, man. So we got a ton of emails asking us to tell us a little bit of information about your infamous bar fight story.
Yeah, but which one? I'm not going to tell the Swedish bar fight story again. Because
I heard a new one. These people are talking about the Chicago Bear player.
Brian Urlacher.
You know what? I feel so bad about that whole thing. You know why? Because I thought when I was on the Best Damn Sports Show period, Urlacher, right? And they asked me about it, and they said, hey, we heard. And I thought they wanted to hear the story from my point of view. I thought everybody knew the story. And then when I start telling the story, the next day, the whole website from Chicago Bears, everything is trashing Urlacher. And I go, dude, I had no clue. I would have never done that. And because he was a nice guy. You know, he just, you know, his brother, he started the whole thing, you know, and he just came up for his brother, you know, and so that's protecting his bro. You know, so it was really not not that bad, and I felt horrible about that. He's a good guy. The next day I saw him, you know, he said, hey, man, how are you doing? And it was like nothing happened. And then suddenly, you know, when they asked me about that story, you know, like I said, I thought everybody knew. But I found out the next day that nobody knew. So I felt bad about that.
Well, when you were in your prime, you're pretty much fighting almost monthly. And like you said with Pancrase, you were fighting not even knowing the rules. What do you think about, what are your thoughts on the length of time between fights the guys have today? Some guys aren't even fighting for 3, 4, 5 months doing these crazy training camps. Do you think it's a little excessive, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's too much. I think as a fighter, you should fight like at least 4 times a year. You know, I truly believe that, because otherwise you guys are down the whole time. You know, if you don't get injured, you know, if there's a fight next month, fight next month. Why would you not fight? The first year in Pancrase, I think I fought 9 times, and the second year also, like 9 times. You know, I wasn't injured, so might as well keep on fighting. And but that's the problem now. They have so many fighters, and they have only such an amount of events, you know. So it's going to be harder and harder. Maybe they're going to even put on more events to make everybody.
What do you think is behind the rash of injuries now in MMA?
It's just the training. It's the wrestling. People are focusing on the wrestling, you know. It's either you're a really good striker with great wrestling, or you're a really good ground guy with great wrestling, you know. The wrestling is always the middle thing that you need. And a lot of guys still, and I have no clue why they do it, still wrestle with wrestling shoes, and not on wrestling mats, but on, like, judo mats. And that is, like, the dumbest thing you can do, because at the moment you plant your foot, there's so much traction. If you have an upper body rotation, if you grab somebody, you lift them up, and you rotate to the left or to the right, well, you blow your knee out, because that foot is on the ground, and you have so much traction, it stays on the ground. So unless you rotate your upper body, yeah, something happens. So but all pretty much, you watch, 90% of all the injuries is all because of wrestling.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you actually mentioning wrestling. I had a little bit of a different twist on this. You had wrestled professionally, like professional wrestling, a bit in Japan for New Japan Pro Wrestling for Antonio Inoki. Did you have any pro wrestling training before actually wrestling for that company?
No, never, never. I did comedy shows, comedy martial arts shows in Holland and in Europe for Dutch and European TV. Very funny shows we did with the fake fights and stuff like that. But when they came ask me for pro wrestling, I said, oh, yeah, man. This is awesome. That was funny, because here's a funny story. My first fight, so to say, between coach, it was in Tokyo Dome, and I was Don Fry was in my corner, and I fought the number 2. I was going to lose that fight, right? Mm-hmm. So, but they, you know, you train them to begin, you train the middle, and you train the end part, and then the rest you ad lib. So the thing was that he was going to throw me against the ropes right away from the get go. He was going to deliver an elbow in my face, then another elbow in my face, and then he would, you know, wave his hand, you know, to the audience, and then he would drop me with a final elbow. I would take an 8 count, and then we would start fighting. So this guy throws me in the corner, And the first elbow is perfectly timed. The second elbow is harder. Third elbow is a full-on hit. So my automatic reflex jumps in, and I hit the guy full with a palm strike on his head. And this guy, you know, I mean, he goes down, and he's out. And he lays there on the couch. He doesn't move. And I look at Don, and Don goes, oh, my God, you know, now what? And the referee starts, like, very slowly, walks around him, and he goes, like, one. And then he walks another circle around him, two. They were getting so scared of me. After that fight, everybody came to me before the fight, and they said, please don't hit for real. Like, hey, you hit me, I hit you back. It's very simple. You know, that's how it works. I'll be nice to you, but just if you can hit me, because you never know with those guys, you know, if they might do it on purpose, but acting yep. like it's not on purpose, you know, and I'm just not yep. going to take that risk. You know, you hit me harder, hit you harder. That's the name of the game.
Very sneaky.
That's it.
Yeah, they are. They are. So if you could bitch slap any celebrity in the face, who do you choose? Who would you choose?
Oh, God. You know, yeah. That's a hard question. I never had that. I never have anybody that I really dislike. You know, you would say that the whole Jodi Arias case, you know, you would go like, okay, she does deserve to be slapped. The stuff she did, and then the people, I mean, it's insane. The planning that she went into to do all that, and you know, and sitting there and then making that the victim look so bad, suddenly make him look like a bad file and dragging him through the mud while his family is sitting there. I go, yeah, okay. Somebody needs to slap her in the face really hard. That was the only one that will pop up at the top of my head right now.
Well, why does Steven Seagal have anything to do with Anderson Silva and MMA?
I think it's all a joke. There's nothing to do there. He's not training them for real. I don't want to bring anybody in trouble, so I'm not going to say anything about it, but trust me. It's not like he's holding the focus and telling him how to kick. So I don't know how that worked and how it happened. But, yeah, the trainings that you see online, that's probably all the workouts they did.
Yeah.
So and look at the workout and you decide.
Yeah, how do you think he would fare if it was 1990, the 1992 version of Steven Seagal, if he wanted to get an MMA? How do you think he'd fare in MMA?
He never fought, guys.
If he was to, what would you think? What would happen if he fought? Would it be something like what Ray Mercer experienced?
Yeah, of course. They never competed, not even full contact. They're not used to getting hit in the head. Anybody who tells me, oh, my teacher, I mean, I looked up this morning, I saw this guy who's trained in Dutch Holland, Thai boxing, and he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he got this and he got that, and he teaches you how to win on the street. Yet he never fought. A guy like that, I will never listen to. I will, you know, there's things that, of course, you can learn from them, and I'm sure there's locks and everything that will work from Aikido, but the attacks from Aikido, the whole basic up is taking over the power of your opponent. He overcommits to a strike, and you turn it into a throw or a twist with an arm, and then it becomes a throw like that. But nobody attacks like that. That is that style attacks like that. It's the same as when you say, okay, Taekwondo, we're going to put you in mixed martial arts. You cannot compare that. Plus, in Aikido, there is no competing in Aikido. There is it's a beautiful art. I'm not saying anything about that. It would have been great if he would have done on the side, if he would have been a boxer and he would have had 20 or fought 5 boxing matches. That's already, because then we know if they can really fight under pressure. The whole thing about fighting, because otherwise everybody could do it, is can you fight like you fight in this dojo? And I don't mean against people who attack in a certain way. I mean full contact boxing, Thai boxing. If you can do that game that you have in the dojo and you can bring that to the cage or to a ring under pressure with millions of people watching and cameras in your face and you can fight the same, then you know if you can fight or not. Before, if you didn't do that, you can never tell. Nobody can say. They can tell me he has 20 black belts. I don't care. If he never fought, we don't know if he can fight. And I've seen those guys also, other guys who, not Sikal, but I've seen other guys who, you know, who are supposed to be badasses and fought 1,000 street fights. I said, 1,000? You're a really aggressive dude, man. If you had 1,000 street fights, what? You had to have a magnet for violence? What's going on here?
Are you talking about Kimbo Slice?
No, I don't talk about Kimbo. You know, Kimbo did actually really good his first fight. You know, when he started training with us and when he really listened and he did everything, I thought he did really good. He picked up really great escapes, even with James Thompson. You know, he had some backdoor escapes there that we worked on that he did. So I really, I was impressed. Later on, it started getting downhill. But then again, he also started getting injuries, you know, so.
Yeah, yep. One more question before we let you go. Actually, Dave, you have a question?
I had a question. Besides himself, who's Baz's favorite fighter?
Who's the baddest what?
Besides yourself, who is your favorite fighter?
I would never pick myself as a favorite fighter. I really like Jose Aldo. You know, I love his style. Very Roman Becker-ish, striking, super explosive, you know, and it's just a solid guy. I like him a lot. And I think the fight against Pettis, that's going to be an incredible fight. Pettis
is going to be a war.
Every time I see him fight, he's a super talent, man. Really cool to see him fight. Both, it could go both ways. But now we're going to see this is such a powerful striker. Let's see what Pettis can do against it. And he seems to find every time an answer. So.
Yeah. One last question. Do you feel that you're more of a fighter or an actor at heart?
I think fighting is a lot of acting, huh? People don't know that, but you know, slowing down on punches, acting like you're going to do a certain thing and you don't do it. So, you know, I use that a lot in sparring. So and in fighting, you know, if you listen to the career DVDs that I do with my commentating, you can literally see what I'm thinking. I'm talking, and I will tell you what I'm thinking at that moment, and you can actually see because the way what I'm doing that I was thinking that at that moment. So I think it's pretty close together, I think. Simmers Pro Wrestling and all that stuff. Only then, yeah, of course, you need to learn how to fight for real if you're pro wrestling. But I don't know, man. Let me say this. That let's say I was a fighter, and now my career is over, and I blend over into the acting, and let's hope I can do something here. So this way, I attack it both ways.
Well, you are doing it. You stole the show, and here comes the boom. And now, like you said, you're on a movie set right now with Kirk Cameron. Please grab his ass for me. And we can check out Boss Rutan on Twitter. At Boss Rutan MMA. You can check him out every week on Inside MMA. And, Boss, any other projects coming up that we should know about?
No. I'm you know, the O2 trainer, that's an invention that I had when I was a 14-year-old kid, and we made it now. Now we have medical companies buying it because people with asthma don't use an inhaler anymore. It's your lungs getting stronger, bigger, for athletes, great, for singers, for everybody. And that all the focus is on that little device right now because I'm trying to bring that out to the people, and everybody who trains with it, they're sold in one workout or two workouts. They know what it can do for them. So that's the focus. And then I have probably another movie coming up in August, but I'm going to talk about it if that's actually signed. You know, in the past, you know, every time when I say something and it doesn't happen, and then I learn suddenly, if I don't say anything, that actually happens. And then as soon as I sign, I will tell you about the next movie.
Well, we want you in Expendables 3, so I'm hoping that's what you're talking about. Boss Rutan would be amazing in that. So we're hoping.
He fits right in.
Fingers crossed.
Fits right in. I would really love to do a focus on comedy. Comedy action, you know. If I could have my choice, I would love to stay in that genre.
Awesome. All right, Boss, again, at Boss Rutan MMA on Twitter. Boss, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
The legendary Boss Rutan.
Thank you. Damn straight. God,
thank you, Al Guapo himself, Boss Rutan.
Wow, that's awesome.
I love him.
He's a fun guy. He's probably fun to hang out with.
Yeah, can you imagine just having a beer with him?